Hey guys, really glad to be back with you. In fact, we're in a lovely London at the moment, and I am with CEO of Pure Gold, Joshua Saul. Joshua, great to have you back on the program.
Thank you, and thanks for coming in.
Absolute pleasure. I wouldn't have missed it. We've actually done a couple of vids that was very well received surrounding gold and silver and the time. Is the time now? I suppose my first question then is going to get straight into the meat of it, Josh, is sound money. In unsound money times, gold and silver for most people are the answer. It comes down therefore to the question, are we in sound money era or are we in an unsound money era, in your take?
It's a good question, and normally we answer these sorts of questions with, what our clients are saying. We are one of the only companies to speak to our clients to understand exactly what they're looking for, what motivates them, what
Very
worries them.
consultative, aren't you, in terms of that? That's a good point.
And the big conversation at the moment is debt. And debt encompasses the global situation, and it also encompasses the, the personal debt situation. That is a big issue. People are very concerned with the amount they've borrowed over the last 10 years. Let's not forget, since 2008, the government's answer, both US and UK, to get themselves out of the debt spiral was to continue printing more and more money. They had to do that to stimulate the economy. They dropped
Indeed.
interest rates down to hardly anything.
Correct.
And, we've got, a lot of young adults that have never seen a rate rise in their adult life.
That's unbelievable when you say that, isn't it?
And for us, I mean, even myself included, for me to envisage interest rates at 5%, you speak to someone in the 1970s or 1980s, they would say that is ridiculously cheap. Bite off someone's arm for that. But today, effectively, that would increase someone's mortgage payments by 350%, right?
Ouch.
Which is a lot of money. So, when we're talking to kind of real everyday people, the big conversation is debt. People are living in lovely houses with lovely cars with credit card bills that allow them to go on holiday. And rates are increasing because effectively all the government can do right now to control inflation that right now is sitting at what, 9%? Is to do the only tool that they have, which is to put up interest rates. The only time that we've had interest rates like this was the inflation like this was around 40 years ago, during the 1970s and 1980s. And back then we saw, I think, inflation climbed to as high as around 23, 24%.
It's unbelievable.
Interest rates during the 1980s were pushed up to around 15%. So, if they could apply 15% to the amount of borrowing that they've got, I mean, that's enough for everyone to stop listening to this video
Exactly.
for
And
fear
run.
of depressing themselves. My take is that, they're not going to put up interest rates to 15%. The
No.
difference between now and the 1980s is that, debt sits around 30.5 trillion, whereas back then it was 1 trillion.
Yes.
And if they were to put up interest rates to 15%, then the interest on the debt that we already have would be far more than any sort of income that we get from that the government get from taxes. So tax revenue would be completely dwarfed.
Long before we get anywhere close, any of those numbers, it's game over, isn't it? A whole bunch of things will fail probably at 5%, even if you goose stepped in one big jump there because of a, fear and a massive increase in inflation and a super spike, and you just made a real big move. That'll be game over, really, just on the amount of debt. Because I always say, sort of we put our hand in the jar and then you try to grab all the sweets, and you just can't come back out that neck. Because it's unsustainable. You mentioned also your clients. You've got quite a broad spectrum. So in a large sense, your competence is A, that you're consultative, you're talking to people what they're feeling, hearing, and seeing. So you are a great aggregator of the market's view and opinion, and you're seeing people shift. Plus, within that, I'm sure you will have Mr. Plumber, blue collar guy, East End of London, running his business by a couple of ounces. And in that, you might have some pretty institutional people that work within institutions and quite a broad stroke. So you're getting some smart money view in that as well as the working man's view. Josh, is that correct?
Yeah, we've got a really wide array of client, from everyday people that you see fixing our London Transport, to engineers, to investment bankers, to accountants, to lawyers, to people within government. Even clients that don't buy, the value to us in having that consultative approach is really understanding what's motivating people to even have the conversation.
Yeah.
You know, that information is invaluable, and it's invaluable to a lot of the top tier publications like the FT and the Wall Street Journal, Bloomberg,
yeah.
who then seek to rely upon the information that we've heard from the market.
Yeah.
But yes, we deal with hedge fund managers, who right now, again, the common denominator between all of these different stakeholders, whilst their personal circumstances are so different, the common denominator is inflation, it's debt. And it's a real worry because, the impetus for us to do something with our money has never been as great. You know, if you're not earning 9%, you are losing
it,
right? Yeah. So the days of leaving your money in a bank account and just kind of hoping for the best, they're over.
Yeah.
And actually, gold doesn't really have to win the war on saving an investment products.
No.
It just has to win it less badly.
Yes.
And that's kind of the way that our clients see it. I think there's going to be huge opportunity in the equity and the bond market in possibly, 2, 3, 4 years down the road.
We're talking about shorts on bonds, or are you thinking that people will come back in and buy the debt market?
We are thinking that there are certain types of investor who will short.
Yeah.
We know that Ray Dalio is shorting the European market right now.
Yeah.
He's expecting there to be one of the biggest crashes in European debt and equity over the short term.
Yeah.
But I meant from more of a wait until markets have bottomed out, bottomed out,
and then
coming back in to purchase cheaper assets, whether or not they are cheaper properties, cheaper equities, cheaper bonds. The question is, what do you do whilst waiting for that to happen? Because you can't leave your money in the bank.
No.
Because by leaving your money in the bank, then effectively your money is halving itself over the next 5 or 6 years.
More importantly, I actually think you should hold cash, but more importantly, leaving it in the bank is you're retaining a bigger level of counterparty risk than you've ever had before. While a cash note at almost under your bed, if you can manage the risk of being robbed, you probably will actually almost turn into a safer investment. There's some value to cash. Gold is mildly negative for the year, but it's a great performance compared to assets like bonds and equities. Only thing that's probably easily beaten it is cash and a few things like oil and a number of items there. Counterparty risk. I mean, surely this is the season of counterparty risk as well. Do many of your inputting feelers from all the various people, do they make reference to the outlier risk for counterparty risk? Because this is where I think not enough people are focused. I sometimes feel like I'm almost being gaslit and I must be wrong. But there's banks going bust in Australia now. A lot of what we've been saying, the small and medium caps, and all the big magic circle are being kept alive by government. Don't people understand that? That they just have to decide, we're done with this experiment, we're done with the game, and you get the entire magic circle fold, and this is your reset. And then it's, hey, we've got a whole new system. Why are you hearing about counterparty risk?
Absolutely. And actually, we've been hearing about counterparty risk for the last 3 or 4 years. I think, back in 2008, we saw arguably one of the biggest banks in the world collapse. We then saw, other regional banks collapse. We saw Northern Rock collapse, Lehman Brothers, and then we saw lots of other US state banks in the US collapse. Circumstances are far worse today than they were back then.
And the stress tests are deemed very patsy stress tests.
Absolutely.
The recent ones conducted in America were absolutely slated for, a little bit of a slide rule, quick tick the box quiz. So people that seek surety by, oh, no, they've done the stress test. This is mood music to not panic the sheep, surely. And also the concept beyond the stress test is the deposit guarantee. It's great if a single bank goes, a small, medium-sized bank, sure, state will soak it up. What do you really think is going to happen on the deposit guarantee if the entire banking system is switched off?
Well, it's largely academic, isn't it?
It is.
And we hope we'll never find out, and we probably never will. The issue is that lots of our clients are concerned about leaving their money in the bank, and they're too worried to make such a big deal out of it in case everyone decides to remove their money from the bank. Yes. It almost becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, because if everyone out there decides to take money out of the bank, then we will it to happen. We affect we affect that collapse.
Start the stampede.
We start the stampede. So people are quickly and quietly doing it. What concerns us are the types of people. We see a lot of investment bankers who tend to be our clients. Again, they can't necessarily give us insight as to why they're doing what they're doing, but we pick up on trends because we need to know and understand our clients. We know that maybe out of every 100 clients, there might be 21 or 22 investment bankers.
Yeah.
But when we see them all calling up at this within the same two or 3 days, you know, removing a large amount of money to bank accounts, to equities, the common denominator here is the counterparty to those transactions, that being the bank, then, you know, that for us is a cause for concern.
I've also noticed banks themselves, it's much harder to move your own money around. Now, A, is it that I've got a bit more and I'm triggering a whole bunch more limits? Or B, is it because I'm in multiple jurisdictions and there's an international element? But even when I'm doing local transactions, this, oh, for your safety, this and for that, and oh, what are you doing with it? And the degree of inquisition, it's now almost called the Spanish Inquisition if you're moving a six-digit sum, never mind a seven-digit sum, especially. And I had an experience seeking to purchase bullion. And this was Panama, and I'll share it with you. It's the Latin into North America. When we announced purchasing was for bullion, one of the intermediary banks that was American said, we will not allow that. We want to know what it was for, and we will not allow it. So that was for the purchase of bullion leaving the country of origin, wouldn't allow it. And the second one that would says, we're suspending it on the 1st of September. So do it. Do what you want to do now, and after we won't be allowed to do it. So they almost had to intermediate me through the one that was their backup, because the main intermediary would not. And that's not the only, I suppose, example or case. There was also in Germany, people are not allowing metal. In Germany, people are being reported they can't move their metal out the borders. Are we getting to the point where countries are viewing, much like the China is, that their personal citizens' holdings almost as collateralized on their own balance sheet should they ever need it? In other words, I wouldn't go so far as that automatically implies confiscation, but it is certainly deemed a country holding if citizens are holding. What's your take on that? Because to me, it feels like people who are waiting for the price and the technicals, and I am a technical guy, are going to miss the boat, because that feels like there's a tightening around the neck in terms of blood to the head, if that's be the analogy. What's your take there?
I guess the way I see it is I liken it to the foreign reserve currency, in that every other country and central bank around the world hold dollars.
Yeah.
You know, we've got 80% of the world's invoices and purchase orders, they're denominated in dollars.
Yes.
And therefore, every other central bank has to hold those dollars.
Yeah.
So when the US does things like print money and print lots of it, and that devalues dollars around the world, then, you know, other central banks, they'll pay for those mistakes.
Yeah.
And therefore, right now, we are looking at the central banks, global central banks, holding US dollars is at a 25-year low. And they and central banks around the world holding physical gold is at a 31-year high. And the reason for that is it's a natural hedge. You know, as the dollar devalues.
Say that again, actually. I'm going to ask you to repeat it, Joshua. So let's go over it. Did I hear right? 25-year low on central banks holding dollars. 31-year high. This literally takes us almost back to the last bull market on central banks holding bullion.
Correct.
Wow.
Correct.
Big statement.
And it's a prevalent statement, because if you apply that rhetoric that the central banks are taking, in the sense that they don't want to risk holding dollars in case it devalues considerably, a bit like the purchasing power of sterling, you know, back in 1946, we moved from Bretton Woods over to the US.
Yeah.
If we apply that rhetoric to everyday people, in the sense that actually, you know, why should they be expected to hold currency that is devaluing every single day?
Yes.
And actually, the government don't expect them to. because they know that actually the only way out is to do what the governments are doing,
yeah.
which is to hold physical gold bullion, which yeah. would seek to hedge themselves against a devaluing currency. Your question is, are going to make that more difficult? I think certain countries probably will,
yeah.
and certain countries will find it difficult to impose such restrictions because in a way it will kind of send off a big smoke signal in yeah. terms of how bad things have become.
Right.
I think a lot of our clients enjoy purchasing physical gold and physical silver because it's private, right? Yeah. It's private, it's physical, it's tangible, it's portable. You can
it's
move
non-digital,
from...
I would say.
It's in
a world where everyone is being pushed digital.
Absolutely.
Which brings us to the Bitcoin argument and how bearish it's been there and how what an underperformer it's been this year as well. Just on that point, while we talk about the physical and the digital, Bitcoin was born into a QE 1, 2, 3 environment of 2010, 11, 12. In fact, we were showing the rates and looking at the 10-year, it's down at 2.88 today. But generally, we haven't been through the 3.2 since 2011. So basically, that was the QE 1, 2, and then we went and had 3 and 4 still into, I think it was 14, they were still printing it out. Gold has survived, many say 4,000. I personally think it's probably 12,000 and more. God knows what civilizations, but who knows? It's a millennium of era. And it makes Bitcoin look a little like a fad, given that it's truly only had, and I'm not a knocker because I participated in crypto and I will again. Mm-hmm. And I do actually see if they go back to hyping printing again, that it will probably outperform again on the upside, all other things or crypto as a whole. But it hasn't ever truly been tested in macroeconomic environment like now. And right now, if it's an inflation head, it's behaved as a pretty poor one. Any comment also on that?
Look, I think crypto and more specifically Bitcoin, you know, it's an amazing technology. I yeah. certainly think it's here to stay.
Yes.
It should be an inflation hedge, but it's untested and yeah. there's no real track record for it because we've never really seen inflation whilst it's been operative.
Yes.
And I think because such, you know, the majority of people that hold the world's wealth in Bitcoin are held by such a small minority of people, the propensity for manipulation is so much higher than most yes. other markets. I'm not saying that other markets aren't manipulated. They are.
Yes.
But I think the volatility in the crypto market is a reflection of the disparity between the majority of people that hold the minority of asset classes.
Yes.
And that I think is a concern. Like I say, you know, as I said before, there's opportunity in any crash.
Yes.
And, you know, some people might fancy taking, you know, a little bit of a speculative risk in purchasing some crypto. The conversation that we've been having with various clients that's come up when we talk about to what end will inflation and the increasing of rates to control it, you know, how will that affect debt? You know, where are we going with this? You know, what is the end result? Because they can't, it's inconceivable for them to increase interest rates
yeah.
to a point where they are able to abolish inflation, right? Yeah. It's not going to happen.
No.
So it'll restrict it. And I think what they're trying to do is they're trying to force most markets into a recession. But they're not going to, you know, they're not going to remove inflation. You
no.
know, they're going to have to increase the debt ceiling. And we're going to get to a point whereby, you know, we're having to hypothesize as to what can happen to this debt.
Yeah.
Is it a currency reset? Is it debt forgiveness? Digital currency? And the reason why I mentioned digital currency is because we started to see lots of countries and organizations look into digital currencies.
Mm.
And when I think about digital currencies in relation to crypto, the motivation for people to put money into crypto was to take advantage of a decentralized liquidity source.
And liberty.
Yes.
While in actual fact, what's being proposed is exactly the opposite by the central banks. It's complete centralization. It's control over what you buy. It's control
yes.
over everything.
So there's a conflict there.
Indeed.
Which makes me think, you know, will the government, you know, effectively people that put money into crypto are looking for an escape valve
yeah.
from the dollar or
yeah.
from the currency in which hosts their country. So there's going to be a conflict between digital currency and cryptocurrency.
Yeah.
And, you know, will that result in those host jurisdictions applying, you know, considerable taxes, you know, to crypto? You know, will they want to remove, you know, demand for crypto so as to increase demand for their own digital currency? The answers of which I don't have, but they're questions that keep on coming up.
And that's the risk factor with crypto, because libertarian orientated people, even everyday people, will choose a Bitcoin over a central bank digital currency. What are they going to do to make their bread the daily bread instead of the Bitcoin croissant? I think they're going to hamstring it and break it a little bit. And that means super regulation, taxation, climb all over it, everything. They need to steal. It's been a gateway drug to something else. It may not continue to exist, or it will continue to exist and be led to taper into a nothingness, overburdened, kind of a bit like, an asset class that is, and then has been taxed into nothingness and no longer is viable and is yielding negative returns, for example. I fear a little bit for that because just doesn't make sense that they're offering, which gives them so much power and control for them, they're going to be allowed to be undermined by something very similar.
Yeah.
That's already been in existence a little longer. How do you do it? Or you just flood the world with central bank digital tokens and you just, it's a second tier, lesser class money, and you make sure you get all your tax from appreciation in Bitcoin. It comes down also to, I don't put by the full Satoshi story. Maybe the legacy families already own that, you know, or they will engineer an outcome where they own it through BlackRock. You know, they'll say, well, this wallet hasn't paid tax on its capital gains. We're going to have to seize it. We've used X computing. Now we've done it. We're going to pledge this collateral. You know, Satoshi disappeared, died, whatever happened, fairy tale, they want to tie up with that. Here's going to be, you know, a world fund for promoting green agenda, da 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 da, and it comes under the wing of a big BlackRock or something. That could be an outcome that could be a negative outcome because having such a volume as well, they would clearly control the price as well. It's a bit like being the guy who owns 90% of the gold. Anyway, that's just speculations on my behalf.
But you mentioned FAD, and I think in all of these asset classes defenses, you know, there was so much contrived growth as a result of money printing.
Correct.
That it created bubbles everywhere. You know, we have bubbles in equity, bubbles in debt, bubbles in classic cars and secondhand Rolex watches. And the crypto market.
Yeah.
You know, we saw it everywhere. You know, there was too much liquidity.
Correct.
And there is an argument to suggest should the government have increased rates sooner to curb what would have happened to inflation?
Yeah.
You know, we have seen so much stimulus in terms of COVID. There was a stat that I heard the other day whereby it was reported that 80% of the dollar bills in circulation have been printed over the last 3 years.
Yeah.
With a predominant focus over COVID. So,
and I think there was about 30% of all money in issuance was of digital, including in the banks, was created in the last 18 months. You know, now it would be maybe 2 years. That in itself, that's the total pool. That's unbelievable too.
Yeah, it's concerning because, you know, all we really have is the past.
Because cash notes percentage of total money probably actually went down because they're trying to taper that.
Yeah.
So that's the other point. People should hold some physical cash, in my opinion, because actually it's even tiny bit outperformed gold. But in the long run, it's more for the opportunity because it seems like there's a big contraction now. We had this, nobody even can tell me anymore. At one point there was 6 trillion, 7 trillion, now it's 4.5 trillion. You never know how much was actually created by America, how much of it was needed offshore. But it seems now we're almost having a dollar shortage again with that tightening. They're draining the liquidity, they're increasing the rates. Money is flowing out of the yen, for example, which is sitting with only paying, you know, 0.24 on a Bank of Japan bond. You can earn 3.5 or 2.8 at the moment on a 10-year, and you can have a currency that's going to appreciate. So we're also seeing inside the fiat system, the circulating. At what point do people stop running from one fiat to another and say, why aren't I just in gold? Because regardless of the short and medium term, it's a good performer this year compared to everything's contraction. Over the decade or over the two decades, this is going to be the best parking place. What's your comment on that? Are people still chasing the merry-go-round a lot? What percentage would your take be is a holder? Let's talk UK as well, because the UK, the one thing I also want to ask, this is a double barrel question, I suppose. Our central bank in the UK still very low on bank reserves. We had Brown's bottom and all the others are buying. You mentioned the 31% increase. Has British central banks started with buying gold again? And surely they are very under held assets class.
Well, a lot of central banks are arguably underweight physical gold, and that's relative to what we think currency is going to do. Just going back one step to gold performance, I think the most interesting thing about gold pricing and gold performance is it needs to be measured in the currency in which you're trying to remove exposure from.
Of course.
So in US dollars, you're right, you know, it hasn't really done much over the last 6 months. I think it's been around 2.5% increase. But if you look at sterling, we're looking at around 9.5% increase.
Yeah.
In euros, around the same. If we look at the yen.
I was about to say, let's bring up the gold yen chart.
We're up 20%. Turkish lira, 34%.
Both those are beautiful examples.
It depends on the currency you're removing exposure from and the currency you want to take refuge in after you sell your physical gold.
Absolutely. And it's a very, very good point that. Because not everybody, one of your clients is an American client. In fact, it's probably not the highest amount being on the GMT timeline. Let's just bring up that gold Japanese yen chart. I will do a quick one there. And we can just remind that gold is absolutely doing its job for the Japanese. And let's do screen share so that everyone can capture that. And so it's such an important point. And dollar will have its turn to lose value. So here we go. Let's see if we can get that chart up. And I was also highlighting this in terms of equity as well, because many people go, oh, equities have done better. Well, US equities have generally done better and are probably the most hypervalued. But that's our gold against the yen. We were part of this breakout over here. And look at that. I mean, you've gone from 140,000 essentially yen to 245,000 roughly, give or take. That's immense defense for the Japanese. You know, in the period of, you could have got in out of 140 in May 19, you're 80% plus, going on 100% if it hits 280 there. The other thing I was doing is looking at, I mean, we're in Britain, you're a provider to many of your clients will be local. From a country point of view, I came over to the UK during 1999, and the FTSE hit a high under Tony Blair of 6,950. That was the FTSE 100. I think it's UKX if I bring that stock up, indice up, and we go there. And gold was in and around $250, $250 roughly. Don't quibble over the cents and you'll be okay. So literally that top was 69,000. That was 1999. We sit alongside each other 23 years later and you are at 7,250. So you've gone from 7,000 up 250 points. And boy, did you get shaken out plenty if you had worn that.
Yeah.
Because you would have sat on the volatility. That's an awful return that you've experienced. You've essentially had the dot-com boom, the great financial crisis of the subprime. You've had a little bit of ups. You had the COVID capitulation. For that level, if you beta adjusted for volatility, that is an absolutely diabolical. Mm-hmm. Now, assuming pound was around 130s at that time, in fact, it was actually quite high going into the GFC. The pound traded 211 at one point. So you might have even had a situation you could have bought gold around that period for about 120 pounds. Now, if we look at gold in GBP and go back up the chart, we're jumping around a little bit. As a Brit, you have preserved an unbelievable amount of buying power and value. So let's get the gold pound up because I know I've got it there as well. So that's your FTSE, an absolute dullard for 23 years of performance. Mm. It's not even going to you know,
and if you look at that graph, you know, effectively what you can see is something very frustrating for someone that just leaves their money in a pension, because what you've got is kind of three steps forward, two and a half steps back. And, you know, if you watch, if you look at the Smart Money Flow Index, you can start to see all of these major institutions removing removing liquidity from various stock markets, the S&P 500, the FTSE 150. And if you follow some of the smart money, where effectively you follow them to is a safe haven asset.
Yeah.
It's not about doing, you know, 100% of any asset class forever.
Yeah.
You know, it's about seeking the benefit of the trend whilst you can. And with physical gold, I would say, you know, for our clients that purchase gold, some are looking to buy it and never sell it and give it to their grandkids. That's fine.
Yeah.
The majority of our clients want a, they want a refuge whilst the storm outside gets worse.
And it's defense season, really, isn't it?
Absolutely. It's a contrarian asset that will allow them to grow their portfolio in something that is physical, something that's tangible, something that doesn't incur any taxes whatsoever when they liquidate and they've grown and they've made money. And something that allows them to take advantage of other opportunities as of when they exist, either in equities, either in property, Bitcoin, government bonds in 3-4 years time. But you want to be in a position whereby you are using growth in an asset class that has a track record of increasing during 100%. Times of uncertainty to take advantage of asset classes that have a track record of decreasing in times of uncertainty. And it's not rocket science. You know, if you follow what the smart money are doing, that's exactly what they're doing. And effectively, you don't have to take this dance of two steps forward, one and a half steps back for the next 60 years. You know, effectively, you can move two steps forward and then another three steps forward and another one step forward. And you might decide to hold for the next 1 or 2 years.
That's right. Absolutely. That was a point well made. We'll finish on the charts. This is only 2007 that goes back. If you go to 99, when it was 250 and the pound was close to double the dollar, you would have actually gone right down to near 100, let's say 120, and you're now at 1480 going 1500. So in terms of 120 to 1500 versus that FTSE performance, where you didn't even get a fraction of a positive percent, and you've experienced unbelievable dilution in your fiat measure. So that's 7,150. If you bought a basket, 7,250 of diluted pounds purchasing, where the peak Blair, 69.50 on the dot-com boom was a pound 23 years ago, which bought a lot more. When I came over to the UK, you got a up in the Midlands, you got a pint for 70p and you paid a pound in London.
Yeah.
And now I think it's five, isn't it?
Yeah.
Anyway, we'll find out just now. excellent. Let's finish on that. In terms of pure gold, the one other element that into why people and a lot of our community have engaged with you, with a lot of European, UK, and this timeline, and you do deliver. So tell us a little bit about the benefits of engaging with your own self, the buyback, and some of the other details, which is important for people to appreciate.
So first of all, it all starts with the team that we have around us. You know, we have, you know, qualified, empathic individuals who have worked within banking or FX or the legal world. So they understand the market intrinsically. Because we take that consultative approach, we understand why the person that we've spoken to before is doing the one thing that you're hoping you might be able to do with your circumstances. People's circumstances are never really the same, but they're similar. And the benefit of our expertise and the fact that we get to speak to so many people throughout the day allows us to offer some of that life experience to other people that we're talking to. Now, that might be necessary and it might not be, but if it is required, we have it to offer. I think the other element is that not least our spreads, you know, the difference between what we sell at and what we buy back at, very, very narrow. We're one of the only organizations to provide a certificate of authenticity, right?
Okay.
You know, other competitors listening to this might say, well, we sell gold with certificates, and that they're right. You know, they're selling gold with a manufacturer's certificate. We have a certificate that states that the gold, as of the point of purchase, has been certified.
Yeah.
Because, you know, let's not forget, gold is circulated, one, two, three, four times. So we make sure that we have a team of numismatists that verify and authenticate every bit of gold that we buy in and we sell out.
And in this fakery and deception world, I would place a much higher value on that, because the minute people will thin out the gold, the tungsten, the stories we've seen. In fact, governments have passed bad bars to other governments and have been caught. There's a deeper dive on that. So there's a true real value. And I will say also on our Latin side, where we use the supply chain on that part of the world, we have a service and we scan all bars as they come in and with a full X-ray. You can't underestimate what a value it is to have someone say, we will take it back as given to you if there's anything remotely not as stated in that piece of item. And I think that's what you're saying, Josh.
Yeah, and to back that up, we give the buyback guarantee. Yeah. You know, we say that at any point, if you're looking for instant liquidity, we will provide that to you. Again, not many other companies do that.
Yeah.
You know, if we believe the gold market is going to dip, we will suggest, we think possibly you should wait a couple of days and consider purchasing on Wednesday, when we think the gold price might be a little bit lower. And if we've heard information that we think you'd want to know about sooner rather than later, then we'll make sure that, you know, it's conveyed to you in real time, because that's the market is sensitive more now than ever.
It's very volatile as well, because we've seen the 3.5 run on the 10 years, which I'm saying is the beginning of the end of the debt fallback, but you're down at 2.888 at the moment now. And that's been leaning on gold, because the failure of debt, the increase in the yield, is the failure of the system, and gold is the insurance against that. So every pullback, you're going to have a lull, and having someone say, look, you might be able to get 5% more ounces if you just hold it off for a couple of days is worthwhile on that. But what is, just for people's argument's sake, it's great to say we'll have a buyback, but how far off are you going to be from spot? I mean, what's the detail or the nitty gritty on that?
Well, we never guarantee our buyback prices, just because we never know where the market is going to be when clients look to sell back. And I think it's important to acknowledge that there's no other company that offers a guaranteed buyback.
Yeah.
We don't buy back, we've never bought back from clients under spot value.
Yeah.
Whereas most of our competitors will buy back around 3-5% under spot.
Yeah.
So we don't make any guarantees. We will say that it's unknown for us to purchase back at below spot.
Yeah.
And you know, based on certain types of coin, you know, we paid close to 14, 15, 16% over spot for certain items. I think right now, whilst not many people want to sell because of the macro environment, you know, inflation, debt, the fact that most central banks believe that we are either in a recession or about to be in one, clients who could be suppliers don't want to be suppliers. They don't want to sell. They would much rather buy.
Yes.
The irony is that actually buyback prices are increasing, because the availability of gold around the world is becoming sparser.
Yes.
You know, I don't know if you heard, but a few days ago, the G7 announced news that suggested that they were going to sanction any Russian exports in terms of gold. And this is huge. You know, Russia holds, they are the sixth largest holder of physical gold in the world.
As well.
And stacking, But for the first time, and actually I think we mentioned this in one of our videos earlier in the year, for the first time over the last 15 years, I think 6 months ago or a year ago, they sold a load of metal. They sold gold. They sold gold to the UK. They're trying to find out exactly who bought it, and it hasn't come to light yet. But since, and there was no ban on that. Obviously, not many refiners want to put their name to that. And since then, they put a ban on that. And the implication of that is that, you know, if Russia holds, if they're the sixth largest holder in the world, we've carved out a huge supply of physical metal to a metal that already is finite in supply. And therefore, a lot of the analysts believe that when we start to get to a point where central banks around the world are going to start to increase their gold holdings, and they would rely on a country like Russia to sell to them, that's when we will start to see the relative increase in value, because central banks can't buy enough to hedge their dollars against what they believe to be, you know, financial ruin.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I'm kind of curious as to why Russia would actually sell. Might have had something to do with that seized dollars. Maybe they thought they needed to get a few dollars because they had a banking problem. But overall, Kissinger said the world is pivoting east, and that there's that great curiosity about how poorly gold's price performs during the American session and how generally it performs a lot better. And I bring this up to just about everybody I speak to in this topic, and I might have already brought it up once to you before, that on the eastern side is generally put up. And we also refer to markets being manipulated. So it feels like the core, the talking stick, the leadership stick is being handed slowly over. And the other man's hand, the American hand, is still holding grimly onto it. But there is a new hand out east, and it's not specifically one nation. I don't think we should view it as Russia, China, whatever. But there is the talk about the BRICS, the Saudis as a petrodollar. I've now agreed to start to do some yuan-based business. It's all a time and an environment where long run it's looking precarious for the dollar. Short term, they might beat their chest and try create momentum into the dollar, because that's typically how they've responded. But it does feel like gold is moving east and power is moving east. And do they go hand in hand? What's your take on that? Is it the golden rule? He who holds the gold makes the rules. And how does that fit in a digital world potentially as well? Because if they want us all digitally, it's not a digital thing. But does it give the confidence for people to accept a new fiat system in a digital realm if they are holders?
Well, let's not forget that when you know, countries deploy their digital reserve currency, that is going to have to be backed by something. And I don't think there's any coincidence that central banks all around the world are shoring up huge amounts of physical gold bullion. Because right now, if you think about it, they are hedging their dollars with physical gold, because they work inversely. You know, dollar goes down, gold goes up. So they've got the perfect hedge. It doesn't matter what happens to their gold, because if gold doesn't go down, their dollars have gone up.
Correct.
When they introduce or replace their currency with a digital currency, it would make sense for them to peg their digital currency to the gold they're holding to provide stability to it. And in a way, Russia kind of did that. You know, Russia, you know, since they invaded Crimea back in 2014, their objective was to basically remove debt down to zero, purchase more and more and more and more physical gold. In a way, they've now pegged their currency to their gold reserves.
And now they're the strongest currency. They've gone from 156 to 53 to the dollar. Very handy.
it's very handy. It makes you think that what they're doing isn't, you know, we've used various sanctions on the Russians by way of banning them off SWIFT and almost kind of financially cancelling Russia, if you like. But, you know, I would say that the Russians have been pretty sophisticated in the way that they've, in the way in which they've orchestrated the run-up to this. And I would say, you know, China are probably watching with bated breath and thinking,
and
how can we use this to our benefit when looking at other countries like Taiwan? So I think, you know, in answer to your question, I think that digital currencies will have to be pegged to something in order for it to have an inherent value. And I think the only thing in which they can peg it to is the physical gold that countries hold, because they're either holding cash or they're holding gold. And actually, their cash isn't worth anything. It's depleting. It's becoming worthless.
Exactly. And you know, I mean, just to pivot slightly on that whole perception of backing, we're seeing Tether being critiqued again, even though they've done a while back, I think it was a year now, a much more detailed disclosure of their backing. A lot of it being treasuries, which of course have shrunk in value and are now paying a higher yield, but relative to inflation, still a negative yield. So their collateral has been reducing, even in the best category, they say best US debt. So people are, it seems like seeking the pain is how backed and how strong are you? And the same process goes for nation states with the likes of Turkey and all the others. Desperate to hold gold. I think there's been some mandates on them. Give us your full reason as to why guys should be. I mean, I think we've made the case. Do you believe in sound money? Are these sound money times? Yes, I believe in sound money is my answer. No, these are not sound money times. So gold and silver certainly should be, in my opinion, overweight position. A lot of people go, oh, 1%, 5%. I just think, well, how much do you want to preserve, really? I'm not saying 100% don't have a property, but as an asset class, we didn't really touch on property, but it doesn't move. And it's a great way of wealth extraction as well, isn't it? And it's populist. If they do a spike of interest rates, a lot of people get shaken out, and a few people that own outright and the super rich, there will be a lot of divide and conquer, channeling the taxation, channeling the a lot of these things. We could find on real terms, as much as I like property and it's a physical thing, at a performance level, it becomes quite an onerous hold.
Yeah, and it's not as liquid. You know, you need to get your hand on money. I mean, historically, you would rely on your mortgage company to remortgage and provide you with an advance. That's not really the case these days.
No.
And I think, you know, look, it's all relative, Francis. I think to look at gold in isolation would be to ignore all of the other alternatives. And I think to really look at the merits of gold or silver, in a way, you have to invite all of the other asset classes to the table.
To the bar.
And you've got to look at all of them. You know, if we look at equities right now, they've been at an all-time high as a result of stimulus and injected cash, right? Yeah. They've been injected with steroids, and they're now starting to come off. We've seen the S&P 500 fall by 20%. Yeah. We've got the price to earnings ratio for the S&P 500 at around 33. And every time...
And all their consumers in recession.
And all their consumers are in recession.
And inflation.
Yes.
So they're getting their jobs cut. They're getting cancelled. A lot of hiring is not taking place. At the same time that their gas bills are going up, their rental bills are going up.
Yeah.
So that earning trajectory as well is down. You could actually have the market trade down and the PE trade down up at the same time.
Yes, absolutely. But, you know, we've never seen throughout history a situation whereby P ratios have gone above 27 and that hasn't been followed by a huge crash.
Yeah.
So we are on borrowed time anyway.
Yes.
And,
agree.
You know, if we then move on to bonds,
either
corporate bonds or government bonds, I mean, it's a short conversation because the yields are not big enough to cover you
against
inflation. And counterparty risk is increasing.
Of course.
So then we move on again. We look at property. And property, look, property is a great asset because effectively you've got commercial property, you can generate income from really good tenants, but you know, would it be a better time to buy whilst that asset is cheaper?
In this work from home world.
In this work from home world, absolutely. With rates projected to increase at around 400% to what they are at the moment, there will be at some point an oversupply of property onto the market.
Oh, absolutely.
Which will bring down prices, which I think is probably a good thing. I mean, I want my children to be able to afford a property at some point in their life, and there's no way that's going to happen if property prices are at the level they are at the moment. And then we move on to things like crypto. You know, right now, you know, there's a lot of risk within the market. There's a lot of uncertainty in the market. It's not for the faint-hearted. Yes, you can make a lot of money, but you can lose a lot of money. You mentioned keeping cash. Again, you've got to keep some cash because you never know what's around the corner. But at the same time, if you're losing 9% per year and in 5 years' time, your money is worth 50% less.
Oh, no, it's not a five-year hold, I wouldn't say. I think what we're expecting to have play out probably within 2 years, I really do think we'll have had all sorts of recession and reaction.
Yeah.
And the ability to then bring that cash to bear on things that could deliver 50-100% plus over a 3-4 year trajectory will be good. Just having it feels like gunpowder. Eventually gunpowder has a shelf life. But you should have some of it on the side. Definitely.
Yeah. So that's what a lot of our clients are seeing gold as, you know, either a long term store of wealth or a holding pattern that allows them to take advantage of other asset classes. You know, 10 or 20% of your portfolio in gold goes a long way if we see a 40% fall in the equity market.
Yeah.
And during the 1970s, when we saw inflation much higher than it is today, but we are heading in that trajectory, we saw the gold price increase by 1,000%.
Yeah.
Some analysts are saying that we are at the beginning of another bull run.
Yeah, I would say.
And, you know, for us, we're less concerned with price. We're more concerned with the safety and security that it provides you in situations like we find ourselves today where counterparty risk has never been as high.
Yeah.
Businesses that we see today, we cannot take for granted that they're going to be there in the morning.
Yeah.
It's all very well that you've made 10 or 15% on your equities that are paying you, you know, a really healthy dividend.
Well, it's like the Luna paying 20% and then it's zero.
Exactly.
You got 20% for a while, and then there's nothing. There's very elaborate games that's catch you on catchy headlines. Gold is not a catchy headline. Gold is eternal. It's almost like wisdom. It's not going to have a marketing banner. There's no people that run marketing for gold as a category per whole. Like you have a meat board and a dairy board, is there? It just is that critical thing. I feel it's going to be a major, major overperformer. But more importantly, as you were referring to, it's something you can birth yourself into owning if you've not got it, that you'll be able to bridge from the old rail system to the new monorail system that I think is coming. Because I do think the old railway lines are going to be rolled up. The debt is unpayable. The inflation is going to be stubbornly high. There's quite clearly supply chain issues that are going to do double tangos with the pricing as well. So you're going to also have quantity and volume restricted. We split the world in two, you know, BRICS versus West, aging West. The money is moving east. You really, really need to birth something that you know you will still have and hold even when the monorail world is here. And you're no longer on a chukka train, but you're on the monorail going with magnets and whatever it will do. And that is the digitization, and you'll still have that. And you'll still have options, hence why people should absolutely be speaking to you. Tell us about delivery and times and specifics to yours. We know about the buyback. As yet, there might be an extreme circumstance, but you've always been at spot or above if people need to be getting out. Delivery, you've also delivered to me. So one thing I also make clear to everyone here, and this is a personal integrity statement, I don't interview or engage with anyone or put an affiliate link, because we will be respected for bringing pure gold in without utilizing it myself. And I have had substantial packages delivered to me piecemeal, well organized, well communicated and delivered. What was meant to be there was there. I am a user of pure gold as a purchaser and developing and building a position in precious metals, both silver and gold. And in fact, they recently sourced for me some platinum as well, which was a point of interest that I just thought I'd get a bit exotic on. So the link below is how you choose to engage. What should people expect? And anything I haven't mentioned that you would like to mention there as sign off, Josh?
I would say that knowledge is power in this very, very uncertain world. So it's, you know, if you have the inclination, but you're not quite sure, you know, what you wish to do, get in touch with us, you know, speak to us, ask us questions, allow us to provide you with information that might provide you with a clearer mindset. You know, this might not be for you, but it, you know, 9 times out of 10, you know, taking a small position or purchasing a small amount and seeing what that can do for you over a short period of time relative to other asset classes out there is the prudent thing to do during times of uncertainty. So get in touch with us, you know, ask us the questions that you perhaps haven't asked anyone else. You know, there's no such thing as a stupid question or a silly question. You know, sometimes society makes things so complicated that we forget the simple questions.
Oh, absolutely.
That becomes, you know, that's prevalent to me, because I have a 4-year-old that sometimes asks me the most basic questions in life that I have to really think about, because we're so used to kind of talking in the complex narrative. So, you know, get in touch with us. We make things simple, we make things clear, and we are super accessible. Have a confidential, discreet conversation with us. We can give you guidance in terms of timing, when to buy, when not to buy. We can give you guidance in terms of what you should be purchasing, what you should be avoiding, and timeframes for your purchase. Generally speaking,
and delivery. You'll do delivery not just in the UK. For our European friends, for how far will you go? I mean, in terms of getting a package to someone, can someone in Latin America, USA, use your services?
So we deliver to USA, we deliver in and around Europe. A lot of our clients within those jurisdictions prefer to store at our vault. So we use a third-party vault called Loomis, who are a London Bullion Market approved vault. So safety and security is second to none. They get full insurance, fully segregated, fully documented. If they ever want to have their metal released and sent to them, they can do that. But it's safer with them than it is within your top drawer. That being said, all gold is capable of being delivered. Some clients prefer delivery in the absence, they prefer delivery instead of storing anywhere else.
Me too. I'm in that category. Excellent. Josh, it's been really fascinating, and thank you for this. I want to just highlight a couple of key things you said. Our business, we always ask to speak to people so they don't have unrealistic expectations in terms of coming on trading. They're not going to be overexcited and hype and lose their heads. And we want a personal conversation with someone who's trained, who give real guidance and show people. What I like about your business is you have that similar model. It's conversational. It's not, here's our website, go browse and shop and buy. There's an element of consultation. You can get to know someone, account manager, people that'll still be there each time you call. And you also said there's no conversation or question too small or too stupid, or no investment amount that's too small. If you want to start and you just want to put £500 and see how it goes, start there. Maybe later, as you will grow bigger. Is there scope for people to do even monthly contributions and buy ad hoc, or will those be separate purchases?
No, absolutely. So we have something called the Accumulator, which allows people to set up a direct debit with us. And we will either send them out a gold or a silver coin, or we'll store it on their behalf when they want delivery. And oh, that's nice. It's a nice way of being able to, it's a discipline of yes. saving, whereby you don't have to consciously think about it.
Hundreds.
And over a 5-year period, what you find is that you might have enough for a down payment on a property that is now worth 40 or 50% less than it is today.
And you've 10x. Yeah, or even just held value. If you're not doing what's popularly known in the Twitter sphere as DCA, dollar cost averaging, which in this case, ironically, is pound cost averaging, PCA, you should start almost immediately. You could go and you can do a bullion vault and you end up having internet gold, or you can actually have the physical thing purchased for you through Pure Gold and held or stored for you. And then it gets to a certain size, you're a bit concerned, Loomis could be taken over by government, have some of it delivered to your home and make special arrangements for that. Joshua, thank you very much. It's been awesome. The links are below. Book a call, have a chat. If ever you realized sound money is the game and we are in unsound money times, this is an investment everyone should have, in my personal opinion. Thank you so much, Josh.
Thank you for coming in.
Absolute pleasure. Nice to see you in person. Bye for now, guys.
Goodbye.